Why don't we start with you introducing yourself just for kicks, so I know that two guys didn't walk off the street in t-shirts and, you know, and say, we want to wear some headphones for the next 20 or so minutes.
Okay.
I'm in unison. Very nice.
Yeah, well, we harmonize when we speak as well as sing. I'm Ollie from the band Touring Breaks.
And I'm Gail from the band Touring Breaks.
And I say Touring because that's the way most Americans seem to say it.
We'd say Touring,
like C-H.
So I know about the Manchester sound, the Liverpool sound, the Leeds sound, but the Touring Breaks sound borrows from Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, and I dare say Phil Spector. How dare you keep doing that and selling 500,000 records that are so completely unhip? How can you do that and sell so many records? It's not hip. This is, you know, you're blowing it for all the guitar bands.
That's the essence of hip, though, isn't it? If you can take unhip and make it hip. But
I think I've made an entire living at that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You're the expert.
But I mean, come on. How can you get away with this? Taking music you grew up with, you actually love, and you haven't kowtowed. I don't even know how to spell that. You know, obviously.
Nervy. I guess it might just be magic. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, it might not last forever. But got no idea.
It's called Get It While You Can.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. We seem to have done a good job over the last 5 years of doing it. But I think we're increasingly aware of how what an endangered species we've become.
Yeah, well, for all intents and purposes, yeah. Have you been making albums since 1999? Mm. Have all of them been released here?
Yes. We made three complete LPs, and they've all been released here. But the Optimist LP, our first one, which is... we were just having a conversation earlier, is usually most people's favourite record that we've done. That kind of had a tough ride over here because we were very ready to come over to America and, you know, work really hard. And then, of course, September the 11th happened. And that happened, we were supposed to come and support the Stereophonics around America. And that was scheduled for like September the 12th. Oof. So that all got cancelled, and we were meant to open in New York. And ever since then, we've had a really tough time getting to America. All sorts of trouble with visas. Gail was born in Iran, and that gave us some major problems. So
great. Just
and
what
it
the
still
world
does,
needs,
actually.
Right?
Still does give us major problems.
I was born in New York, and it gives me major problems.
I'm sure. You must be a terrorist.
It's the glasses. It does it every time. Okay, so a keyboardist friend of yours suggested the name of the band, but I read you chose it over Melancholy Crack and Tired Fly.
Yeah.
Any others you'd like to share? Any other joyful moments in band history?
Song Dogs.
There is a band called Song Dogs who are releasing records right now.
My apologies to them.
We were for quite a while just called Gail and Ollie, which was pathetic. I mean, that's why we had to think of a name that was going to be beyond that, because if we didn't, we'd still be sitting here as Gail and Ollie, and that would...
You never know. The music could have provided. It's possible.
Well, yeah, we just didn't want to sound like an old folk duo. You know, we were already.
Question. I've got a question. I'm gonna get rid of that one. That's question number. I'm right there. Question number five. That's coming right after. So get ready. I'm gonna talk about an old folk duo. Okay, but you haven't been together as a band constantly. But it started when you were kicking footballs together at the age of 8. Now that's a lot of musical history together. Now I know you went off to film school, and we'll get there in a second, but.
We've been messing around with guitars for a long, long time. But we never, you know, together we always just made music for fun. I know it sounds like a cliche, but we really, really...
As opposed to music because it stinks.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
Yucky stuff.
Yeah, most people hate
music. As opposed to kind of making music to be in a rock band and sort of get all spunky and, you know, jump on stage and try and impress your mates.
Okay, again, how unhip of you?
Yeah, very unhip, really.
But it was more. It's more than that. We just had so much fun doing it that we didn't really want to. We didn't want to enter it into a world where it could be quantified by something else. No, we just wanted it to be good for us, and that was all that mattered.
So here's the old fogey question. Ready? But are you really a band, or would you rather be known like, say, old fogies like Simon and Garfunkel, who bring their best musicians in with them to kind of make the sound, you know, fuller and all of that?
That's a good question. When we started out and we signed the contract, we were aiming more for, you know, like the idea of like Chemical Brothers or Daft Punk, people that work together as a duo but aren't necessarily you know, aren't necessarily just limited in that way.
Right.
I guess it doesn't, obviously. When
I mean, your drummer is not showing up for the interview, you know.
No, well, we have a bunch of guys that we've used for 5 years, but our drummer has been on, was a little bit on the first record and a little bit on the
I'm using that record as an example because, you know, you see this, right? And it doesn't say touring and breaks, obviously.
It's ambiguous, isn't it?
But
it really
well,
is.
No, I think it's cool, but in the end, I'm just curious, you know, which you really, not that it matters, you've sold a lot of records, but, you know, I wonder if when people show up to see you, if they're kind of like, band?
Yeah.
Duo?
I think we like sounding like a band. We like it to appear full-bodied and with drums and all sorts of things happening, but we also like the creative aspect of just being two of you. And even though you could technically go and get someone else to play, you know, much better than you on keyboards and drums and things, I think the thing that we always did was we made big-sounding music out of very small pieces, and that's kind of the key to our sound in a way. Is it's not getting an incredible piano player; it's getting Gail to play the piano, and he'll sit and he'll work it out as if it's a guitar, and it will come out a very particular way.
Well, that way it stays melodic, because indeed you only compose on one of those instruments.
Yeah,
you don't compose. I mean, if you compose on drums, that would be a really funky little
that would be interesting
funky little moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Now, the album, speaking of control and wanting to do it your way, was the christening of your new studio, No Big Time Producers. And yet, I was in the car driving here, and actually, I think the new single is Over and Over. Mm-hmm. I just decided that's the new single.
You're right. I think that's the plan.
I think that, well, see, what do I win? I was scanning the tracks, and I just said, okay, the next track I'm playing on this record, this thing just kicks.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, the fact is that this, and I've listened to a lot, as we all do, a lot of music. This sounds really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, there's not like too much reverb to kill anybody, and nobody's mixed up any particular instrument because somebody has an ego that requires that, or no vocal. It's just, it sounds as if I'm in somebody's living room and I'm listening to something great.
Yeah, well, that's good for us to hear, because we, you know, when we did it, it was a bit of a risk, and for our label especially, I think they were kind of scared. Our management company,
because it's not
really
as slick
scared.
As slick.
Well, yeah, because we said, you know, we're going to go into this little studio that costs very little money with a digital system. You know, we're not going to go all analog crazy and spend.
But that's groovy, though. Come on, Bright Eyes, and you know, Connor sat here, and you know, he said, "Oh, I would never go into a big studio." So you know, I mean, I think you did it because you wanted to.
Yeah, we've always had this idea of that we could make a record in this way, you know, ever since we signed a deal. We kind of found it hilarious that we'd made all this music with a little four track and everyone loved it and everyone wanted to sign us, and then as soon as we signed a deal, everyone wanted us to go into a big studio, you know,
to
spend as much money as possible.
They think they're doing you, I mean, having been there a million times, they think they're doing you a great favor.
Yeah,
you know, because they'll assign you a producer, they will assign you, you know, the world's greatest artist to do your album cover, you know, who's done Led Zeppelin 4, 5, 6, and 42.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that's great, and sometimes you go into the record shop and you miss the record because you don't even know, you know, I can't tell how many artists have come in and said, well, we didn't want to be on the cover, we wanted a Gauguin painting. And it's like, but, you know, sometimes that doesn't, again, back to our friends Mr. Dylan or Simon and Garfunkel or Leonard Cohen. Yeah. I mean, they weren't exactly the most beautiful looking human beings on the face of the earth, but they, but they're, you know.
We actually tried to not be on the front of our albums until this one. This is the first one where we said, let's be on the front of this one.
Ah.
Just to,
okay, my favorite.
Contradict you there.
My favorite, thank you. I need some contradiction in my life. I need a lot more of that, let me tell you. My favorite topic, making it in the UK versus America. I think there's not a current British band that hasn't passed through this show in the past year. And I mean, just about everybody. And some care, some don't. But you've had 8 top 40 hits in the UK, right? Which is still a singles country. We've now got iTunes here, which gives us singles back again. And you have it there, too. But you've sold 500,000 records, which is pretty damn impressive these days. So how important is it being massive, to use the term that you use over there, you know, how important is it being massive?
massive.
Because there are several, I love this, I won't mention the BBC One DJs, the two of them, who every record every week is, this is the most massive record.
Yeah.
But you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it starts with a Z, and he's got an L in his last name. And every time I listen, it's like, this record, this is the new one by Turbo, and it's massive.
Yeah. We're obsessed with massive in the UK.
you know, we'd really like to be massive in America. Who wouldn't? I mean, that's kind of the whole thing. That's what we were brought up listening to
but
bands.
But what would
that
you
were
give
massive.
Up? What would you give up to be massive in America?
What are you offering? Well, you know, what is it, what is it exactly that, that you would give up to
I
be
don't
massive
know.
In America?
What do they have
I
to give up to be massive in America? She's shaking her head.
He's pointing. He's looking at our.
I'm looking at the record
our
company
label representative
of course
who's
I am.
Cowering in.
Shows like this one and where you're going down south in LA, KCRW are taking notice. And it wasn't because of the publicity for me. I just liked the record when I heard it. And that's the way it used to be. So is there like a special satisfaction in knowing that people are picking up the record, people are coming to the concert versus heavy rotation from a station? That's what it takes to be massive, by the way. What it takes to be massive is that they're going to be playing, you know, Fishing for a Dream 150 times a day till people are sick of it. Now, that can be a great thing for the right record. Mm. Now, for a record like yours, the problem is that people might not dig any deeper and not get the whole concept of the band. They might buy that single on iTunes and then, next, which is what happened with that band we just described.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my theory behind it in talking to the record company.
I mean, it's interesting because that's kind of why we made this record like we did. We tried the heavy rotation idea or that kind of massive idea on the last record in some ways, on Ether's song. We went with a big producer and we spent a lot of money and we made a very big rock sounding record. And really at the end of it, we felt that we had a better quality experience with our first album, which was a much more self-produced kind of a record that you put out and let people fall in love with, you know. And that was all of the fans that stayed with us and all of the good stuff that happened was not because we were forced on anyone. It was because people discovered us and loved it, you know. So this record was us going back to that idea and just saying, you know, forget really, really pushing ourselves in everyone's faces and let's just make a record that we love and that hopefully other people can fall in love with.
I think it's working. You have fan sites in France, Germany, Holland, Italy. Your song has been in a jeans commercial, which is about as cool as it gets. You're so cool. Where's the most amazing place that you go to play and why? Where do you go and you're like, you know, because obviously you're like international.
Mm. Well, there's been some good places. To take it back to the UK, and we were just talking about Scotland before. There, for some reason, when our Scottish shows are just
nothing just
like
fans,
anything else.
Aren't they?
Oh man, they
know
like
how to party.
You, they really let you.
They know how to party and they know how to fight too.
Oh yeah,
more fights take place.
They party and fight all at the same time.
Yes, especially in Glasgow.
Yes.
Yes.
But
I've only been there twice, but I've seen some real kickers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what drinking does, you know.
Yeah. Drinking right. Mm. Doing it the right way. So, Ali, you went to film school. I imagine you have more than a little input on the videos.
You'd think, wouldn't you? You'd think that. Well, it's interesting because we started out with a lot of input on our first album. Then on the second record, it got so stressful having such a committee of people around. And making videos, it's not about making great art. It really isn't.
Not
anymore.
Well, you know what making film is all about. Mm. It's about the process of getting there. And the second you get on the set, you know, for days and days and days, it's watching paint dry.
Yeah, exactly. On this album, we've had a hell of a lot more influence on the videos, and I mean so much so that on this tour our label gave us a load of 16mm film stock and said shoot your next video.
So you're doing the V-Fest, is that true?
We are, yes.
Tell me a great festival story, you know, like someone who was on the stage next door that you couldn't believe you were next to, you know, blah blah blah. Or well, I mean, because we have festivals here, but truthfully, we have like the Warped Tour. But the festivals, I mean, as somebody said here last week, they said, if you haven't been to Glastonbury yet, or Glastonbury, I got to say it properly, you know, you haven't lived.
Yeah.
So I think the festivals over there, I mean,
they're
number
pretty
one,
serious.
They're massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Glastonbury certainly is.
They are
huge.
Truly massive.
Yeah,
huge.
They're
career
making as well
mean,
for some bands.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to say is, and I won't mention names, but there's two bands this year that are really pissed. Because they didn't get on the main stage. And these are pretty big bands, but they said, well, next year. So there really is this, it's almost appropriate to the way politics is in England, that there is truly a hierarchy to get you up to the rock royalty. And once you're on that stage, you're just, you know. But there's also so many bands playing. So tell me a little bit about what that's all like.
It's usually a lot of fun for us as a band, because when you're touring on your own, you're touring on your own. Like you meet the support act and that's kind of it. And when you get to a festival, you meet every band that you've been hearing about for the past year, you know, and you get to see them play live. And the general atmosphere is it's not just about you and your show, it's about everyone kind of having a good time, and it's quite a different vibe from doing your own show. And you've got to kind of change your set and change the way you're doing things, but in return you get a kind of a larger audience that are just generally just having a really good time.
It's
no matter
what you
do. It's a
great way to sell
music
too, I would imagine. You sell a lot of music as a result of playing one of those festivals.
We've had some killer times doing festivals, you know, where you'll... I mean, the first time we did V was amazing because it was on our first album and we just had a little bit of buzz around us, but a lot of people didn't know who we were, and we turned up a really bad time on the main stage, on the secondary stage, and, you know, traditionally not a good spot to have. And we had 30,000 people come and check us out. And then after that, our fortunes changed. And suddenly we got nominated for the Mercury Award. And we started selling records. And so that it was a major factor, I think, in the first place. They can be amazing for
so
bands.
Completely different gig. You played the London Eye.
Yes. Well, that was all part of the Make Poverty History campaign, and it came in just before the Live 8 thing, and we weren't doing that, obviously not nearly famous enough to do that. So we got involved with this gig on the London Eye, which if anyone doesn't know, it's an absolutely giant, beautiful white Ferris wheel that goes about 500 feet at least, I'd say, above the River Thames, right over the Houses of Parliament. And there's 32 pods, and they're like the size of a mobile home. And the idea was that all different kinds of acts, not just bands, but theatre groups and all kinds of stuff, would take over one of these pods and curate their own show. And you got three cycles, three half-hour cycles. And we teamed up with a bunch of African drummers who Gail's sort of known and played with for a few years. And the whole, it was all about make trade fair, so we decided to do a kind of fair trade of music in this pod. And we played half the set of his traditional African songs and then half the set of our traditional folk pop songs. And had a very amazing time floating above London.
What's the most interesting or unnerving thing that's happened at a gig this time around? Anybody done anything really kind of odd and strange, like called out a song from, you know, a completely different band? Or
we had in Vancouver a few days ago, for some reason, when we got on stage, most of the people in the audience were drunk off their faces. It was incredible. And they were screaming and kind of spitting at us, you know. They were so enthusiastic. This one guy was trying to stage dive, like in, you know,
to one of the slowest songs we were playing. And he did it was hilarious because he got up all pumped up, and then by the time he got up, he realized that he couldn't really stage dive to this music, and he just looked terribly confused and kind of slow motion flopped. Yeah. Off the front of the stage. It was the funniest thing.
No, but that's great. You see, now, film term. You could have overcranked him.
Yeah, we
if
was.
If you overcranked him, he would have done this.
He was doing 64 frames a second.
Yeah,
yeah, he really.
How cool
was.
Is that? Mm. He was a visual for himself. So speaking of the video for Fishing for a Dream, I had no idea the red carpet led to the ocean.
Yeah, really. Okay,
the red
so
carpet
worked
leads
on
to
you.
The water.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
This is good.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because we just thought, well, let's put a red carpet through places where you'd never normally get a
No,
red
but I
carpet.
Like the symbolism of the red carpet, because we all know what the red carpet is. That's the walk to stardom, right?
Yeah, and and the whole thing is we're walking away from it and to the sea, which is kind of hippie nonsense. But you know, it looks it looks really good on the telly.
And other people are like, "Cool, man, dude, cool." I liked it. How are you different? I'll find out tonight. But how are you different in concert than on record, because I haven't seen you yet?
Very different in concert. I think much
more. Do you
rawer.
Like rock out more?
We do, but the set now has kind of moments of rocking out and moments of real reflective kind of very, very subtle folky moments as well. It really does. It's quite an eclectic mix of songs because, you know, we've made three pretty different records, and you know, it's been really difficult finding a way to represent them.
I'm going to ask you to do a musical sandwich, and what that is we're going to pick two of your songs that you're going to play for us, and those are going to become the bread.
Okay.
But then I want you to pick any other music you've always wanted to hear with your music. See, I don't do the influences question because it's kind of like, well, you grew up with it. Who cares about that? But we will literally, I sit in this room and I segue it live with the, you know, CD players and the turntable. So I want you to pick each a few songs that you'd like to hear in between the two songs that we're going to do a little session with.
Okay.
Anything you've always wanted to hear, and I will send it to you. I've done it, you know, time and time again. In fact, I owe the athlete one that we did a couple of weeks ago because they went nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So.
So now you want us to tell
so
you something?
So you're going to pick a few tunes each, and then we'll come back and do an ID and then do the session. We'll play a couple of tunes.
Cool.
So what, hit me.
What are you going to start with?
So will you tell me what two songs, number one, are we going to play in here? What's going to be the bread?
So our songs, maybe we'll do Over and Over, because you were talking about it nicely. And
how about You Come, You Go?
Come and Go.
All right, so that's our bread.
Okay.
And now what's going to go in between on the CDs and vinyl?
Could you give me Black Crow by Joni Mitchell?
I can give you anything you want.
Album. The Taxman's Taken Over.
Oh, well, that would be Sunny Afternoon.
There you go.
That's like a standard on my show. Yeah, it doesn't get better than that.
So
we'll have one of those.
Do you need more? Do you need more than two?
Yes, no, I need to fill up a little bit of time here. I got a few songs.
What can we do that's not normal, like that, you know?
Or you can just pick what you want to hear. It's okay.
Yeah, Coldplay. Let's play the whole of
Thank
X
you,
and Y. A rival band on a rival label. She can't help herself.
This will be the first time in about 100 bands that we've done this with that get to say the word no.
Yay. Can we have some Bob Marley?
Yeah, Bob Marley.
Anything by him?
Love in Vain.
Okay. Bob Marley's cool.
And Sunshine by the Bees off their first album.
Tracy Chapman. Hardwired from a new album, Let It Rain.
Very cool.
And what was that album you just got by Lenoir?
Daniel Lenoir.
Can you think of a track name off there?
No, but the album's called Belladonna. How about some Kelly Joe Phelps?
Oh, what's that track by Leonard Cohen? Is This What You Wanted? Is this what you wanted, to live in a house that is haunted by the ghost of you and me?
Wow. You gave me enough lyrics that all I have to do now is go Leonard Cohen and type that in on the internet, and I'll find the record within seconds.
Okay, I haven't heard that for years. That would be really cool.
Yeah.